You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Review. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Kevin, I didn't make a ranking, so we're just going to have to roll with the flow. Kevin.
I mean, you can make it now. I can throw it in. Don't worry.
Big Dog, Kevin Coelho's here as well.
We're rolling with the
it's
flow.
It's Christmas in June. Joey Noel.
Rolling with the flow is what we're going with.
Yeah.
And of course, the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Hello, Tim. Happy to talk with you. Happy to talk about this movie. It's finally time to talk positively about TMNT for once, Andy.
Here we go. This is Ninja Turtles in Review. It's Kind of Funny's in Review, where each and every week we rank and review two different movie franchises. Right now, we are doing Ninja Turtles and Pixar in Review. You can get them on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com in video form. If audio is more your thing, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny in Review, and we'll be right there for you. But if you want to get the show ad-free, if you want to watch it live as it's being recorded, and if you want to be a Patreon producer, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like Donovan Harkness and the protagonist did. We appreciate both of you so very, very much. So you won't have to hear the ads that we're going to tell you later about Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade and Faerty, of which I'm wearing their bomber jacket right now. You can check that out later. It's very fun, exciting stuff. Thank you, Nick. Thank you. I feel good about it. But let's get right into it. Today, we are talking about TMNT. We don't got time for a whole series of words. No. Acronyms, baby. You gotta love it. A runtime of 1 hour and 27 minutes, released on March 23rd, 2007. Based on its success, sequels were planned, but were canceled after Nickelodeon acquired the franchise in 2009, rebooting the film series with the two new films starting in 2014 with Michael Bay.
I'd like to think that it stands for Tumnut.
Okay. From now on, we're going to be referring to it as Tumnut. Does that work for you, Nick?
Yeah, that definitely works for me. Can I ask Andy a question before we go on?
Yes, sure, of course.
Totally relevant and important question. How long have you been drinking out of that cup for, Andy? Because that looks like my Uncle Paul had a lucky cup.
Are you talking about this Popeye's cup that I
have? Yeah, how long
is that? I got Popeye's today for lunch. I got I would love for it to have been since, you know, two Wednesdays ago, but yeah. No, it is from the day, unfortunately.
From 14 E3 showcases ago.
No, you know, it was one of those, like, it was a cup that just stuck with him, and then it turned into, like, he used to do, like, chew, like, tobacco, so it would, like, be a spit cup.
God.
And it would
be disgusting after
a while. Jesus. That went a direction I didn't expect it to. Like, how is his lucky cup somehow nastier than it first sounded?
God. It was a whole thing. We took a ride at Laughlin one time, and I was like, I'm not riding with Uncle Paul anymore.
Tumnut was directed by Kevin Monroe, a Canadian filmmaker best known for directing this and working on Hey Arnold. So there you go.
Hey,
he knows a thing or two about
did some characters, head.
Right? Music was done by Klaus Badeley, who is also known for the Pirates of the Caribbean songs. This had a budget of $34 million and a box office of $95.6 million, which was really good for CGI movies not made by Pixar and DreamWorks at the time. The Bechdel test is a measurement of the representation of women in fiction. It asks whether a work features at least two women who talk to each other about something other than a man. The requirement is that they must be named characters. This is the first movie we've done since we've introduced this that passes the test. During the climax of the film, Karai and April have an extremely short exchange. Each only has one line. After the Stone Generals demand the Foot Clan join them, when Karai refuses, April asks what her refusal means, and Karai explains that the Foot Clan will help April and Casey find the 13th monster. And there it goes, our first pass.
That was a dope moment. You remember when they said that, and she was like, dude, we have honor, and it was like, oh, fuck, really?
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, given our thoughts on TMNT, I want to start out. I'm really up on this movie. I always have been, and rewatching it, I was a little worried it was going to be less than I expected from it, but this really is easily the best of the Ninja Turtles movie so far. But more than that, I think that it's kind of a really, it's like the best three sets of episodes of a Ninja Turtles show ever, where it's kind of like less of a theatrical experience comparing this to other movies. Is it a good movie? And it's more, this is a really good on the level of like a DC animated film type thing, where it's a different type of structure, but it allows you to get a little bit deeper with the characters, like really just allow them to be the characters they're supposed to be. I love the themes of a family falling apart, having to come back together, all the villains and stone generals and all that stuff, overcomplicated. It's never good when a big blue blast is coming out of a big building into the sky and it's just like, oh, I guess it has something to do with time and an ancient army. Like, ugh, the whole beginning part with the exposition, never good. But honestly, it didn't really get in the way of my enjoyment of the movie, because the stuff I liked from it was the focus. The stone generals and the bad guys was kind of just the dressing to get us where we needed to go. Love the dynamics between all the turtles. The rooftop scene between Leo and Raph might be my favorite Ninja Turtles thing ever, period. Really love it. Love the fight. Love how it's built up. And I love the resolution of it. Earlier when Andy was talking about the rooftop scene of Raph.
You thought it was this one.
I thought you were talking about this. And yeah, I just kind of think that this movie is it's a lot of fun. It's nowhere near perfect. Like, honestly, I don't even want to say that it's great, but it's really good. And I enjoy it a lot. And I was utterly shocked by the voice cast. Because when you go down the line of who's in this movie, like, who the hell would have expected Chris Evans, Sarah Michelle Gellar, you know, Patrick Stewart, like, what the actual fuck? So, crazy stuff. Andy, what do you think?
I love the characterization of the turtles. I thought they were fun. I enjoyed all the same complicated stuff that we had on that rooftop between Leo and Raph. Just a really good portrayal of sort of, you know, a family not feeling like they obviously grew up together, but maybe they're maybe growing apart. And I kind of enjoyed all of those back and forths. But I'm with you. I still didn't like any of the general story about the generals. I found myself pretty bored with a lot of that. When as soon as the movie starts off and it's the tale of this old sort of legend, I'm just like, oh, man, I do not really want to watch this right now. But luckily, a lot of the humor and the back and forth between the turtles kind of brought me back. I enjoy their relationship. It's portrayed really well on screen. The humor is pretty good. A lot of Mikey's lines, and more importantly, are the funniest of them. He's just a silly character, and I enjoyed him. I enjoyed Nolan North as Raph. That was a really cool portrayal of him. But yeah, when it comes to I can't think of his actual name. His name is Winters, but like the actual name of the general from back in the day. That stuff was just kind of boring and not great. And this is the most, like, if 5 out of 10 is a mediocre, I would put this at like a 5.5 out of 10. I think it's like barely above average. But yeah, that's how I feel about the Ninja Turtles, about Tom Nutt.
Thank you, Tom Nutt. Kev, what do you think about Tom Nutt?
Oh, God, I hate that name so much. I mean,
I think you love it.
As far as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies go, this is like, there's a lot more care in this one, I feel like. And it had a lot of fun moments, and I like that it's animated because it allows us to do cooler stuff. But then, yeah, I'm right there with you guys where it's like all that, the 3,000 years ago part, like, just kind of like, all right, cool. This is, like, I wish they had
pretty lame.
Something a little smaller and simpler instead of something like a trans-dimensional portal that was going to open up and an army was going to come through, you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, it also, like, we get through that part of the beginning, and then it's like suddenly we're in like Central America, and it's like, what the fuck is going on? And you're like, oh shit, Leonardo is just out there murdering people?
Like, defending a village, you know, dude.
Just murdering people.
I also want to point out that, like, I think this movie is pretty goddamn ugly for 90% of the way. For it to be a movie from 2007, I thought it would be a little bit nicer in quality. But there's so many areas where the lighting just looks really, really bad. And you can tell it's a little bit lower on the side of budget. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it reminds me of the way pre-rendered cutscenes in games looked back in the day. Just not fantastic.
Yeah, it looks like a real quick. Go for it, Joe.
Oh, I was gonna say, specifically April O'Neil reminds me of like those like straight to DVD like Barbie movies.
Yeah,
like just the way she looks, I'm like, oh, this isn't great.
The leader of the Foot Clan reminds me of like baby's first 3D model in art class. Totally. Yeah,
I think that the like character assets themselves and kind of just like the style really does have that real cheap look. But I think the cinematography and the way that they frame the shots is actually really good. And it's just like, so the quality of the art itself sucks, but I liked the scale. I liked the way the camera followed them for the action. And it really allowed them to kind of be ninjas, which was cool. The amount of like rooftop jumping we get and like parkour type stuff. Like I thought they did a good job following the action and making it feel frenetic and sneaky in a cool way that despite the quality of the art. Joey, what'd you think about Tumnut?
I hate that name. I refuse to commit to this. I liked it a lot. This is the first Ninja Turtle movies that we've watched. Oh, I hate you. Where I feel like there was a very obvious like character for each of the turtles. And it's not just like, oh, they're all the same character and they just have different colors. I feel like they actually like each had an individual personality, which I really like to see. I agree that when I saw the opening, I was like, oh no, it's going to be like Wonder Woman 1984. And I feel like I was just like not into it, but I actually ended up really liking it.
That's a good fear to have, Joe. That's a good fear to have. I'm terrified of that
movie. Yeah, the villains and all of that. I'm like, I still couldn't really tell you like with the Foot Clan and that they were friends and then they weren't friends. And I don't know. I was just like, this is the least compelling part of this movie for me. But I now just want a real life Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Casey Jones, Chris Evans. Like, we've been robbed of that, and that's upsetting. You know,
funny you bring that up. That was actually part of the plan. Sarah Michelle Gellar was going to be April, and Chris Evans was going to be Casey, and the Turtles would have been CG. But Nickelodeon bought it. That didn't happen. And the plot of the movie would have been a continuation of this, obviously. Michelangelo would have kind of felt like he was the only one not growing with his brothers, and he was gonna go to the Foot. And there was a render of a poster they made for what Tumnut 2 would have been. Yeah. And you see the sewer, and the sewer's open, like it's just the sewer top open, and the orange bandana is just lying next to
it. Oh, that's cool. Damn. That's fucking so sick.
Cool. Nick Scarpino, please tell me everything about Tumnut.
Oh man, Tumnut. I'm gonna tell you what, it's no Tumnut Turtles in Time. I'll tell you that right now.
That is true. That is true.
No, I like this movie. I watched the first time. I was like, that was a really serviceable, fun Turtles movie. And I think it was the first time I think I'd seen sort of the Ninja Turtles on screen, on a big screen like that, where they were the turtles that I wanted. You know, they needed to kind of nail them, running them on the roofs, being ninjas. I think the fight choreography in this is really cool, specifically when Raph and Leo fight each other in the rain. I thought that stuff all was really, really cool. It's very simple. It's a very simple, straightforward movie. And I think that it suffers a little bit from that. I'm always the person that's like, this movie's way too long. And I realize how absurd this next statement's going to sound, but it could have used about 15 more minutes of kind of finessing it in there, right? There's just so many elements of this that just sort of come together. And I'm always sort of caught off guard by when we get into the third act. And we have this moment where they're about to sneak into this compound, and then it just cuts to inside, and then it cuts to them, and they're midway through a battle, and you're like,
midway through a POD song, and April's a ninja.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, I think maybe we could have developed that up. We could have led that up to that a little bit better. And you know, like, I think I'm just kind of tired of the Leo and Raph sort of dispute and having that be the main part of the B story. And I think they missed some great opportunities here with, like, you know, April goes to South America and Leo's just there training. And you're like, okay, well, it feels like there should have been a movie before this that led to that. That notwithstanding, he comes back, and he comes back because April tells him to come back. But there could have been a better way to do that, i.e. he saw the statue or figured out something that led him back there. So he didn't go back because he wanted to be with his brothers. He went back because he was forced to go back because of the A plot, and that forced him back into the B plot. But that's all kind of, you know, that's kind of nitpicking. I think overall the movie was fine. I think it was good. I enjoyed it. And I think I was, you know, halfway through it again, second time, I'm like, if we don't, I'm pretty sure we're going to put this top of the list. But it's cool to see them like that. And I hope they make more animated movies like this. No future spoilers. I hope the next one's animated too.
Andy Cortez.
I do want to point out that back in the day, I thought that this is the coolest soundtrack ever. And I take back everything I thought, because I thought the music in this movie was so distracting and really felt like, when you see the product placement, I'm thinking of like the product placement in Transformers, you know, and it's the obvious, like I'm holding this soda at a certain angle. But to hear so many songs that I recognize, because I was very much into that scene, the kind of rock emo scene of the mid 2000s, and to hear them so prominently placed, it's like, this doesn't belong here. Why are you listening? Why is this a fucking like 50-year-old dude who owns a diner with like one dude in the diner? Why are they listening to Cobra Black Starship Eddie? Or whatever song it was that was playing at the time? And one of my favorite bands, This Providence, is playing in the background while they're kind of skateboarding, and it's like a little too loud. And then you get that Cute Is What We Aim For song, Joey, in the worst way possible. It's like, dude, this is not good. We don't need to have this music so, you know, front forward. It like, just let the scene be the scene. Why? It's distracting. I thought it was really bad, and I was annoyed by a lot of it.
I agree with you, but the score is fantastic. I love the score since day one.
Oh, score is great.
And I still do. It is so good. It adds such a good energy to all the fight scenes and stuff. And I love the credit scene. The gym class hero, shell-shocked, hearing Travis McCoy rap about all the digital references. I'm like, yo, this shit is 10 out of 10, but I totally agree. POD.
That's a cool, yeah.
Say no more, man.
Cool credit song for sure. But yeah, there are so many moments of, I don't even know when that song played. What you got now? Gotta give it up. It's like, dude, this doesn't belong here in this scene. Like, don't have it so.
It was loud
enough to be seen to where the lyrics would be written out on subtitles. That's how loud it was.
Good point. Good point.
There is the scene where he goes through the like in the beginning of it, where Mikey is skating through the sewers. That. And I was like, that to me kind of makes sense, because it's skateboarding
and that sort of soundtrack, and it's fun
and it's cool. And then also, by the way, that setup, because it's super, super, super fun. And then he gets back home and no one's there. And you're like, oh, that's sad. Like, this kind of sets up the vibe of the whole movie, or like that whole plot. But yeah, I don't know. It felt like they were kind of salvaging stuff as they went with the soundtrack.
I will also say I have a bone to pick. I think the sound editing in this was really bad. Like, I tried to watch it on HBO and I felt like, I don't know if it's my TV, I don't know if it's a me thing, but I'm never one to notice shit like this. But the music and all of the like action noises felt so loud compared to the dialogue that I felt like I was going back and forth and back and forth. And I tried it on Vudu. I tried it. So I have no, because I tried it on HBO. I tried it on Vudu. I like reset a bunch of shit, but it was really, really annoying and like not fun. And that was the one thing that I won't pick with this movie.
Because Joey was texting me about it. She was like, is the audio mix really bad? And I was like, it's definitely not. And I was watching on HBO. I busted out the Blu-ray just to compare, and both were exactly the same.
Yeah.
So weird.
It might be. Yeah, probably we got to fix it.
Yeah. It sounded great.
So weird. Because yeah, that's not shit that I ever pay attention to. But I was like, what the fuck is going on with
you
this?
Should maybe try headphones. Like do the headphone into the controller. Well, I don't even know if you're watching on your console.
No,
or not,
I was I had it on the
got it.
But anyways,
this is the plot for Ninja Turtles, and everything rhymes with Ninja Turtles. I didn't have a lot of time for her. So red is for Raphael, Donnie's purple. I should never start that high, because that part, I can easily belt that note, but I got to get real loud with it, and I just don't have that type of energy right now. I didn't have a lot of time for her. So red is for Raphael, Donnie's purple.
I like to imagine sometimes, Andy, you're in different venues when you sing these songs. And that one was a coffee shop. You were just in a coffee shop over in the corner. If you guys want to support, I'll be at the
We got a CD in the back
tomorrow night. Yeah. Oh, Tumnut 2007. Uh-huh. I didn't pull a quote on this because there really aren't that many memorable ones. But we get
There is, dude. The final quote, the whole final bit with Raphael is, I freaking love it. I get so many chills hearing it. And I mean, there's the one line here where he goes, "We strike hard and fade away into the night." That's the exact line they end the first issue of the comic with. And I was like, that's an awesome callback. But it ending with, "We'll always be brothers." I love being a turtle. That shit.
You can have that one. I'll give you that one. And now we start off with the exposition. Four turtles, four brothers, genetically reborn in the sewers of New York, named after
Lawrence Fishburne.
Renaissance. Yep. Was that Lawrence Fishburne?
That was Lawrence Fishburne.
I was like, that sounds like Lawrence Fishburne. But then I was like, as the movie went on, I was like, there's no way they just got him for that one VHS.
They sure did.
Named after the great Renaissance masters and trains as ninjas. They beat Shredder's ass, but now 3,000 years old evil is going to be the bad guy of this. And then I was like, oh, cool. Excited to get right into this movie, but guess what? We're not. We got more exposition. Why we started off with that? Beyond me. A warrior named Yowtle wanted to conquer the world. Hi, I'm Yowtle.
Kevin has his hand raised.
Oh, sorry.
So is this connected to the three movies prior? Like, are we supposed
to imagine, right?
So that's the thing, is it is connected to the prior movies, and it's one of those things where there are a couple lines and stuff that contradict a little bit here and there about where we're at, but the movie's considered by fans as a loose continuation of the original trilogy, ignoring the events of the television series Ninja Turtles: The Next Mutation, but is really set in its own universe. Towards the end of the movie, several items are shown that reference the live-action movies, so the scene with all the shelves, the Splinter... Yeah. Is like putting things on. You see Shredder's helmet and staff from the first movie. We see a foot ninja mask from the first movie, the canister of ooze that mutated the turtles and all them. And in the second one, that says TCRI instead of TGRI, which was, remember, the comic first movie thing, but there's a crack on it. So it looks like it could be either, depending on what you want it to be. That's a fun nod. The time scepter from number three, Walker's hat from number three, Lord Norinaga's helmet, and pieces of the armor worn by the turtles in the third movie. Yes. Kev, thank you very much for bringing that up.
That's cool. So yeah, I'm also just very confused by General Aguila, General Gato, General Serpiente, General Santino, and the fifth brother is voiced by a man with an English accent named Winters, who's actually Yowtle or whatever. But it's like, what's the disconnect here?
Why they were like this. We got Sir Patrick Stewart. And then someone's
all
like, hey,
fuck all the Mexican lore stuff.
They're like, he's cool. He's cool.
Yeah.
Like, all
right, the South American lore, who gives a shit? Yeah, we got
that was Stewart. One that yeah, really kind of threw me for a loop too. I was expecting them to bring in someone who was like, you know, had that more of that flair.
Yeah, but, my mind immediately goes
Antonio
to No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, Javier Bardem.
Because
Armando Sante.
Yeah, because we have General Gato voiced by Fred Tatasciore, General Aguila by Kevin Michael Richardson, General Serpiente by Paola Mattioli, Colonel Santino, John DiMaggio.
Well, he wasn't one of the generals. He was the beginning.
He was the Mexican guy played by John DiMaggio. Got it. Yeah. He
also
was the South American guy.
John DiMaggio is incredible.
That's right.
Yeah, hey, spoiler alert real quick. This is a promotion for the Kind of Funny podcast happening later this week. Our guest episode this week is with Billy West, who is the voice of Bugs, motherfucking Bunny.
Everybody
in Space Jam. And Doug Funny himself. So this is going to be a fun one.
Are you going to ask him to sing Bingin' on Trash Can?
I don't know, Joe. You might have to pop in and do it yourself.
he has that in his writer. No banging on a trash can. Sorry.
A quick question for you. In the wall, do you know what this thing is right in the middle right? The like weird head mask with tubes? Holes on the top?
I do not.
It's a beer.
It's weird, right?
It's for beer.
The skinny one you talk about? The looks
right
kind of like
to the shield,
iguana face?
Like slightly above the shield.
To the top left of the shield?
Yeah.
Oh, that. Yeah, no, I don't know what that is at all.
The iguana thing is a foot, like.
Oh, yeah, mask. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, hanging. All right, well, hanging, just something to think about. Leave it in the comments if you think you know what it is.
Hashtag Tumnut.
Ponder on that Tumnut 2007. Not to be confused with Tumnut 3, Turtles in Time, or Tumnut 2, Secret of the Tumnut Ooze.
You could have just called it Secret of the Ooze, Tumnut, Secret of the Ooze, and it still would have been gross.
Y'all are delirious from E3, man. I love it. I like this energy. Let's keep it going. Anyway, all right. So back in the exposition, Yowtle wants to conquer the world. In his quest, he learned about a constellation. This is the first part of this movie where I'm like, we got to simplify this, right? He's got these generals. He learns about a constellation known as the Stars of Keegan, which opens up a portal every 3,000 years when they align to the world of unknown power. He becomes immortal, but at a price. So he opens it up and it reprises his brothers were turned into stone. Also, upon the portal's opening, 13 monsters were released into the world. You following so far, Andy? There's going to be a test after this.
Fuck.
Andy, how many monsters were released into the world?
13.
You just passed. You just passed the test. Kevin, give him his pride, his prize. Please send him some free points to Uber Eats.
Oh, all right.
The warrior king was left to walk the earth, unable to die or forget his horrible mistake. And the monsters that were unleashed continue to plague mankind until this very day. Central America. Present day, someone yells monsters, but she's referring to Colonel Santino, played by John DiMaggio, who is intimidating some villagers for protection money. They get attacked by ghosts of the jungle, and soon Santino finds himself alone. But that ain't no ghost, that's a ninja turtle, not a ninja turtle, Joey. The ninja turtle, in my opinion, Leonardo. Why? Because he was blue and he had swords, and I always thought those two things were way cooler than everyone else's.
Donnie was the coolest. Everyone knows that. It's a fact.
Donnie was like the guy that you needed when your internet went out. My Wi-Fi signal's low.
Any stick could become his weapon. Like, in any situation, there's a fucking broom, boom. He had a thing. He didn't need swords or size. I feel like
you break a stick in half, you got two swords.
Any stick can cook.
Hit that fucking giant rat bat monster with a stick. See how that's going to work out for you.
See what's going to happen there. Got to gut that thing like a fish with your katana blade.
Yeah, anyway. gut it with a fucking... Follow the fucking stick, dude.
The next morning, Santino's Jeep rolls back into town with all the stuff they jacked from the villagers, and Leo watches from the trees. And then one of the little boys is like, it's the ghost. And he's wearing like a cool like mask over him, but very much still looks like a turtle, which is awesome. And then April O'Neil, played by the venerable Sarah Michelle Gellar, shows up the next day to find him. The little kid asks if she knows the ghost of the jungle. She tells him he wasn't always a ghost, kid. And the kid's like, what? Okay. What does that mean? Okay. She loses her footing and falls down a cave. And Leo,
isn't that like inherently all ghosts weren't always ghosts? They were like,
it used to be a ghost.
Some other form.
And the kid's like, this. Yeah, they used to be alive. And then when they die, they become ghosts. That's the general mythos. Leo catches her and says, you're a long way from the city just to drop in, which is a good line.
Leo, voiced by James Arnold Taylor, who you might know as the voice of the main character in Final Fantasy X, Tidus. But most recently and always as the voice of Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank.
Shut up. Oh. I love that. That makes total sense. So, I've been playing through Ratchet.
So we have the voice Leo and Raph. We have Ratchet fighting with Nathan Drake.
Oh. And, but Tim,
you know what's funny?
Titus.
The guy fucking that...
Hate you, Kevin.
it's Tumnut. That's how it's pronounced, Kevin. Tumnut. The guy that voices Donnie is... in a bunch of stuff. He's a character actor. And I looked him up. I was like, holy shit, that guy's been in a bunch of things. And I can't remember his name. It's like Whitfield.
Mitchell anyway. Whitfield.
Yeah, if you Google him, you'll be like, I've seen that guy
he's
before.
Barry in Friends, the one that marries Rachel.
Is that at the very beginning? That's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
The voice of Michelangelo is a dude named Mikey.
That's pretty dope.
Coincidence, I think not.
Live. Truth is stranger than fiction. Anyway, April's here on business. She's looking for some statues for a millionaire. And I was like, I thought she was a reporter, but apparently she didn't
know. So here's the thing. She's a reporter. She has an antique house, all the stuff.
Wait, hold on. We can connect this together. She has an antique house. What is she going to find? Some antique statues. She found them. It made sense.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And then years later, robots take over, and that's how we get WALL-E. That makes about as much sense as Cameron Kennedy's Pixar report or whoever does it.
Why do you refuse to listen to a biologist?
Sorry. Ant-Man 0208 Pixar report.
I love that interview.
He's doubling down.
Turned into this like subculture of shit that Greg Miller doesn't even fucking know about, you know?
Yeah, dude, he has no idea.
Oh, God. Forget everything you know.
I'm sorry, Anthony. We're sorry, Anthony.
No, Anthony. Anyway, April tells him things are worse for the wear, man. Donnie, the boys aren't doing so well. And then we get a montage. Donnie's working phone IT. I love this montage, by the way. Mikey's doing birthday parties as Cowabunga Carl and is getting his ass kicked by little toddlers. But what a creative way to like have them go out and work, right? Where he just puts the turtle helmet on and then like a little fake zipper and everyone just thinks he's in a suit,
yeah,
which is super cool.
Fucking kids kicking him and then like on the floor. And it's like, go, right in the stop.
Right in the turtle soup.
Yeah.
Raph sleeps all day, but by night he fights crime as an armored suit, just like Shaquille O'Neal in Real Steel.
How does no one know that it was him? Like the entire movie, they're like, what is he doing at nighttime? Yeah, but he didn't know that Casey knew until like the third act. So what is he doing at night? Why is he so tired? Also, did you hear about this vigilante that only comes out at night? It's like, guys.
Yeah, by the way, like, and really also smart. His. He's got the biggest fucking skull
go down
of all time.
On women. Like,
oh, yeah.
Does Batman not go down on women?
That, yeah. Just revealed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Stop looking at Kevin's
face. Is it him and DJ Khaled? They just, both of them just don't
yeah,
work.
Both
two of them, dude.
A lot of people say they might be the same guy.
I've seen DJ Khaled play Fortnite. They are not the same guy. They are not the same guy. Let's see, Raph. By the way, was the Night Watcher, is that a thing from the comics? Because it's really, really cool.
No, it's not. And that's the other thing that I think is kind of cool about this movie is the Stone Generals and all that stuff, for as bad as a lot of it is, like, they're not really from the comics. And I thought the twist of him, like, not being a bad guy, him actually just trying to, like, die.
Put things right.
And shit, I was like, okay, cool. There's elements here that are kind of nifty. But, yeah, no, the Night Watcher thing is unique to this. But what's cool about it, there's been different versions of Raphael going out and being a vigilante and dressing up. But as far as I know, not Night Watcher stuff. But I liked it. This movie gave that as a allowance to have Casey and him kind of go out and fuck shit up together away from the Turtles in a much more, like, violent way, even if they don't fully show it.
I also want to give a shout out, obviously, to the voice acting. We've talked about it before, but Nolan North doing Raph is perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's good because he has that perfect blend of, like, what I want Raph to sound like, while also maintaining the heritage of a little bit of Daniel LaRusso and John Travolta. You know, he's again, the only one of them that has a New York accent for no reason whatsoever. But it works in this because it's not overdone, which is good. People should hire him more. It's sad, like, that he doesn't work as much.
Canonically, he's also the only one that, like, goes and explores the world at night, right?
Like, he actually likes New York. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the other ones, they're either talking to each other or watching TV. So I feel like, you know, that's maybe why, but.
I feel like Mikey just discovered weed, and that's just all that happened with him.
Yeah,
and then Donnie's like, computers are great. Never, you know, those computer kids, man, 100%. We talk all the same language, Wi-Fi signals, Ethernet, Cat 6, Kevin fix my
those
internet.
Are all
anyway,
words
back in the cave.
Nick knows, just by the way.
Yeah, wires, fans, cracking. Okay, back in the cave, they have RTX 3090.
In the last, like, 6 months, he's learned all of these terms.
Gaming chairs, Andy's hair, peep. Now I'm just looking at Andy's shop. I'm just looking at Andy's shop.
It sounds like we didn't start the fire lyrics. And these hair gaming chair PS5.
Back in the cave.
It's a Monday.
It is a Monday. This is great Monday energy. You guys, by the way, this crew has brought it the last couple podcasts we've done together. And I really respect that and appreciate that. April tells Leo his training period ended a year ago. What's he doing there? Master Splinter sent him there down there to be a better leader, but he still thinks something is missing. April tells him his brother's lost without him, except Mikey, who seems to really have figured it out with this whole living a double life as Cowabunga Carl. That was me.
Bold.
April didn't say that. And I love that he comes back, parks the car in the little thing with the sewer grate, and then goes down there. It's cool. And he heads back in there to shred the Nar-Nar. And I like this scene. I don't care what Andy says.
Shout outs to
Kevin. He's dope.
Kevin, what do you have to say?
Just shout outs to Cowabunga Carl. Like, that's a solid name.
Solid,
you know,
perfect.
It does
perfect.
The job really well.
It's a funny concept too.
And yeah, the party van, like, so many good Ninja Turtleisms in one.
I love
scene.
It.
I love that the van is just a beat up piece of shit van, but it looks like the old van, like the yellow and green and all that stuff. Like, that's so
the
cool.
Vanagon.
It's a fun little, like. It's good. Of course, when he gets back there, like we talked about before, cool scene. Love the way this is shot. Love the cinematography. Him just shredding everything and, like, jumping down the holes and all that stuff. But when he gets home, of course, it's dead quiet because no one's there. And he says, "Whatever, this place used to be fun." It's sad. He watches a news report about the Night Watcher and reminisces with Donnie about the glory days, and then Raph and Donnie argue about what they should be doing with their lives. And I put it here, shout the fuck out to Nolan North as Raph. Anyway, Splinter comes. I was gonna try to make fun of his accent on this, but it just seems not the right time. Maybe we'll get that later when we get a little quote from him, and I could do, "Hey, Mr. Carter, I don't know what's going on."
My entire life, Kevin's been Donatello, but it has never been more clear than this fucking movie. The scene of him with the screens in front of him. Did you guys not immediately get flashbacks to the studio?
Or
is it like, that's Kevin?
No, it didn't really pop for me until he has that one person where he's like, "Ma'am, I'm not being aggressive. My tone is not aggressive. You're reading it as aggressive, but it's not aggressive."
He wasn't being aggressive. It's just turn it on and off again. It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. Because they turn on the screen on and off, and that's not the computer. You know what I mean? People don't know the difference the computer. A lot of They're times. Dumb. You guys, it's They're frustrating.
I'll tell you right now, guys, power cables, AC adapters. You know what I mean? Exactly. Know 70 what you mean, watt
I know what you power mean.
Peeps.
Tim has talked about how he and Kevin and Cool Greg were like Ninja Turtles. And like each had their own character, and this is the first movie where I've understood which one each of them are. And I was like, I finally understand. No, wait,
is Cool Greg Raph or is he Mikey?
He's Mikey, but there's elements of Raph that like as we've grown up, it's become exceedingly clear that depending how the light hits him, it's either red or orange. You know what I mean?
I get it because at least one open. I was thinking maybe James Burke could be like Raph a little bit there, but oh, dude,
if he wants, he could be our Casey, but that's as far as I'll let him get.
Oh, James Burke is Casey.
he could be Casey.
Oh, I love it.
That's super fun.
Splinter comes back move, in. You know.
And I want to give a shout out to the voice actor here who I don't know if you guys are familiar with, but his name is Mako. He goes by Mako. And I know him from Conan the Barbarian, where he was the wizard / narrator. He's a fucking Iroh badass.
He was Avatar The Last Airbender. Beautiful.
He was oh, in really? Some in review we did this year, but I couldn't. I was looking at his Wikipedia and I couldn't find anything, but I remember talking
he's
about
been in
him.
So many things.
Yeah, he's dope as hell. He was actually announced as Splinter at a Comic-Con and died the day after that. So that's really sad. So the movie was dedicated to him because
that's really cool. He tells Donnie that his brothers are hurting and he must learn to be strong when they are weak. And you're like, okay, that's a cool little thing. Maybe this movie is going to be about Donnie. And then we never hear from Donnie again. April arrives back home and supervises the delivery of a big crate. But guess what? The person she's supposed to help deliver that with is not there. So she calls Casey, played by Chris Evans, and wakes his ass up from a midday siesta. He is apparently going out at night, also as a vigilante. They deliver the statue to Winter Tech, which is cool. And Casey accidentally knocks over a vase and the place goes on lockdown. And I'm like, I bet that's going to come into play later when the climax of this movie happens in this lobby. And I was right. Up in the penthouse, April delivers the fourth general to Mr. Winters, played by Patrick Stewart. They open the crate and look at the statue of General Aguila, who they mispronounce, and he says, and Patrick Stewart corrects them, and Casey almost knocks over another priceless artifact. He's a doofus. April and Casey leave, and Karai. What's up?
I was just saying, he's such an idiot. Like, couldn't be there on time. Like, why is she dating him? You could do better.
Because he's hot. You know what I mean? You get those abs. You got the height. You got the hair. He's got everything going on.
He's got a good heart, too.
He's a
he's
loser,
not just
dude.
Hot.
The fucking loser.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what it is, guys.
Big himbo April's energy.
April's got her shit so put together that she's just himbo like, whatever. You know, he's a boy toy. She's like April. Let's take stock of who these two people are. April, Pulitzer Prize winning news reporter.
You're making that up,
right?
You're making
also
up.
Has a world renowned antiquities dealership, just like enough of that
like
billionaires pay her to go down and find statues, and she just wants a little piece of Casey on the side, dude. I'm not gonna give her
Casey on the side. Does she get the Casey on the side? We'll have to find out in a second. Let me tell you about our sponsors.
This show is brought to you by Faraday Brand. Can it be? It's finally summer, and we're actually going to have a real summer this year. So naturally, we started thinking about looking good after a year and some change, because we're going places. This summer is what Kinda Funny is calling Hot Boy Summer. You saw my jean jacket, you see the haircut, we're doing it big this summer. And that's where Faraday comes in, to make the perfect clothes for summer. Faraday is a family-run brand making high-quality, timeless clothing with modern design and functionality. You know when you're searching for that ideal summer outfit, that set, that shirt, that dress that feels like you've had them for years. Maybe it's in a gorgeous print and it fits so perfectly that it feels almost too good to be vintage, but still looks like it might be. Well, that's Faraday. Tim Geddes is the most stylish person I know, and even he loves Faraday brand clothing. And they're so confident in the quality of their stuff, they have a lifetime guarantee of quality. They'll replace or fix your clothes forever, no matter what. And to top it all off, Faraday is giving all our listeners 20% off. That's 20% off. So stock up on all your clothes for the summer now. Head to FaradayBrand.com and use code MORNING at checkout to snag 20% off all your summer gear. That's code MORNING at Faraday, FAHERTY, brand.com for 20% off. We're also brought to you by Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. It's time to join the resistance because Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade for PlayStation 5 is here. The shadowy Shinra Corporation is draining the planet's life force for their own gain, but all is not lost. The mercenary Cloudstrife teams up with Tifa, Barret, and Aerith to take Shinra down. Whether they succeed depends on you. We are so excited for Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. This definitive edition of the award-winning Final Fantasy VII Remake has expanded graphical, gameplay, and system enhancements, and it brings Final Fantasy's visuals to a new level. It's got more realistic backgrounds, it's got better lighting, it's all around beautiful to look at. Intergrade also gives you the ability to switch between graphics mode if you want 4K, and performance mode if you prefer super smooth action with 60 frames per second. On top of it, Intergrade even comes with episode Intermission, a brand spanking new episode featuring Wutai Ninja Yuffie as the main character. Play as Yuffie as she conspires with Avalanche HQ to steal the ultimate materia from the Shinra Electric Power Company. Play as new characters and enjoy an expanded gameplay experience featuring multiple new combat additions. And if you've already bought Final Fantasy VII Remake for PS4, you can download a free enhancement for the PS5 console. Episode Intermission is available as a separate purchase after you upgrade. Buy Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade for PlayStation 5 today. Go to squex.link/remake KFMS. That is squex.link/remake KFMS.
And now that we're back, can I just give a shout out to Karai? I love Karai, and I love that this movie did the DC animated movie thing of just like, yo, there's a bad guy. She has a backstory. Like, just keep up. Like, that's it. There's not really an explanation. They don't really get into it. If you
understand,
know, you know.
She's a successor.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the thing. I do know. In the original comic, she was dope. She was always one of the highest ranked of the Foot Clan. And in a lot of the storytelling, actually, she's higher than Shredder, which is pretty cool. But in more modern tellings of everything, she is Shredder's great descendant. That wasn't her original origin, but it is probably the most like iconic. Like at this point, when people think Karai, they think great, great, great granddaughter or whatever of Shredder. And she's just super cool. I love her. I think she's always kind of had a better character than Shredder, because Shredder's kind of one note when it comes to a lot of the stuff. But in the way that Shredder rivals Splinter, Karai's always been kind of Leonardo's right there when he's not fighting his brothers. But like that, she was in this movie, and I thought that her and the Foot Ninjas for the first time were like ninjas. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, her kind of giving the like control signals and them all just like sputtering around. I was like, this is cool as shit.
Yeah, I always think it's nice when you have, you know, sort of like the antagonist or whatever the organization is that are quote unquote the bad guys be capable. And she felt very capable, and the Foot Clan felt very capable. And I also think it's cool that they're not necessarily the bad guys in this, right? They're just getting hired to do this job, and they have honor. And when she's presented with that, like, hey, we can give you more power, she's like, no, the Foot Clan has honor. Like, we work for Winters, and so we're going to help the Turtles out now. And I thought that was kind of a cool thing, but we'll get there in a sec. Of course, right now she has snuck in after April and Casey leave. Hopefully Casey didn't break anything else on his way out, the doofus. But man, those, you know what I mean? That's America's ass right there. You know what I mean, Andy? Get that going.
Yeah.
Anyway, he needs the
real long chin too. Real long chin.
Very long chin. You know what they say about guys with long chins? They have a hard time wearing helmets.
Tees.
That's traps. Tim, nothing from Tim on that one. That was just a blank stare.
Sorry, anyway. my audio cut out for the last like 5 seconds.
He's making a condom joke.
It's bad.
You can go back and watch the video. Yeah.
No, I don't know what I was doing. Anyway, Winters needs the Foot Clan to be his eyes and ears. He has some friends coming to town, and he'd like them to roll out the red carpet, greet them warmly, and bring them to me. And then high above the streets, we see a gargoyle eat a pigeon, and it's freaky.
Maybe,
and the animation
maybe
is
just
terrible.
Explain that they're monsters. You know what I mean? Like, well, was you he have afraid to imagine, like, there was going to be a different charge?
I don't know. Maybe he was like, they're going to upcharge me. Let's just, you know, it's one of those things where you hire someone, and they're like, yo, you didn't tell me it was 10 days. But like, maybe they'll just suck it up and do the job, and you're like, cool, because I only pay him for one day, you know?
That's terrible.
You make money. Yeah. You make money.
No, I don't know, actually.
But yeah, they were just hired to like be the eyes and ears, right? Because he had his little four statues.
Like, imagine getting hired for such a complex thing, and then having, and then them being like, well, what are we looking for, you know? And then Winter's like, when you see it, you'll know. Okay, like, you're paying us money to do this thing. We kind of need to know.
Well, like, then it's like,
well,
then
this
it's
can't be left up to speculation.
Then it's a gargoyle, and you're like, wait a minute. You
know what we're looking for.
I'm pretty sure that's what he was talking about, but fuck, like, it's just me and my three homies. We should have brought everybody, you know? That's going to be more gas money. We're going to have to invoice him more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I originally thought it was like maybe he's talking about the turtles, and then it cuts to the gargoyle. I'm like, okay, he's trying to capture the monsters. Yeah. I guess that makes sense.
But also, anyway. How long have these monsters just kind of been out here?
And why are they suddenly like meeting up in New York?
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think it's because the stars of Keegan are aligning and they're maybe coming back to find him. I don't know.
So Keegan. Are we supposed to assume that the original thing that happened 3,000 years ago was in New York? In which case, are these New York?
Good question. These are all great questions.
Back in the day?
They didn't have enough time for the extended cut of the exposition in the beginning that would have explained, well, it actually wasn't in New York, but they traveled and it was a whole thing. Yeah. But, you know,
also, like, look, we know Patrick Stewart is English and like everything here is like South American, but like it's still it's Patrick Stewart. We had to put
it in. They're not expecting 30-year-olds to go back and watch this 15 years later.
I do think that when you've been alive for 3,000 years, you probably pick up a different accent than you started with, right?
Do you think 3,000 years, though, is enough to fully transform to a different, like, dialect? Because I know, you know...
Yeah. We haven't seen Eternals yet. We don't know.
Alana mentions that she's losing her accent.
Yeah,
she still sounds Australian as fuck to me, you know?
Yeah, but I think if you go live in Australia for 10 years, you'd have an Australian accent.
I was going to say, Alana's only been in the States for, like, what, 7 years, 8 years, something like that? He's been... You have to imagine that Winters has been kicking around... Europe at least for 2,000 years, and maybe was like, oh, I'll go over to England because they became a massive power somewhere along the line, and he was like, I'll just
cut. He went to New Jersey and he was like, I fucking hate this accent, I gotta go somewhere else, I can't. Like,
the first guy off the boat was like, hey, Mr. Cod, I don't understand what he's talking about.
He made it work.
There it is
going on there.
It's like Doreen
from Brutal Housewives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like, where the hell are you from? Because sometimes she's like, oh, Governor, I'm gonna, and they all make fun of her for slipping into like a British accent. You're like, English accent. You're like, what are you talking about?
Thank you, Nick. Thank
I love
you.
Curry, dude. I'm on the
line. I was just saying it, hoping you guys are going to move on, but Nick was right there. Let's fucking go. She's from fucking Cincinnati or some shit. And here she is sounding like Greg Miller doing a bad fucking accent.
Oh, no. Yeah. They all made fun of her. It was like that time everyone made fun of Lindsay Lohan for just suddenly having an English accent. And she was like, I spent. And
Alec Baldwin's wife.
Hilaria.
Yeah.
Hilaria?
Yeah, but her name's just Hillary.
Oh, she got into a lot of trouble for that, though. People were like, what are you trying to do?
Oh, here? I remember this little controversy.
Yeah, it was not good.
I'm glad I was able to catch back onto that story thread in the last millisecond, because I was so lost for a few.
You're not up to speed on Dorit from The Real Housewives of
that's what Tim was doing. I had no idea what the... I heard Breet. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about right now. Okay.
Yeah. Her name is spelled weird, though. It's not just Hillary. There's like way more letters than you need to have.
You're talking about Baldwin's wife now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hilaria? That's how we're supposed to be talking about.
You're talking about Baldwin's wife?
We're just bouncing back and forth. I'm just glad I'm just like Captain American Avengers. I get that reference. Let's talk about this. I get that one. Anyway, let's see. We get another awesome Night Watcher scene, but Casey Jones interrupts. He figured out that it's Raph because, you know, he looks like a giant turtle in metal armor. And they argue over which of them is the sidekick and then hang out on the rooftop. And I like this scene. Raph catches Casey up. The criminals in the city never take a break, so why... should he have to be wait for Leo to come back to fight crime? But he misses him, and Casey tells him to go find Leo, and then he tries to confide into him about some parts of his personal life with April, and Raph falls asleep. Winters uses a device to awaken the generals, even though they remain in their stone form, but they come back to consciousness because the stars of Keegan have aligned. And then we see, I think, what is the coolest shot in the whole movie, where a 747 flies in and the landing gear comes down. Who's riding it, Tim?
Fucking Leo Nardo, dude. I love it. It's so tight.
And then he hangs
going back home to New York.
Scary stunt.
I know. He's a ninja, Andy. That's what they do.
Yeah. Tom Cruise.
You and I, we roll our heels walking downstairs. These guys can hang glide off of the landing gear, mm-hmm. like Schwarzenegger from Commando. Let's see. Leo rides back to this. The movie. This is where I put in the movie really did need to be with like having him have a stronger motivation to come back than just missing his brothers. But I think that would have been good. Anyway, Leo kneels before Splinter. And he says, "I apologize for getting caught up in my own bullshit. I failed." And he says, "On the contrary, my son, now you are much stronger." And then Leo tells his sensei he'll make things right with the boys. And Splinter tells him, "You better, because until you do, you're forbidden to fight." Mikey,
can we talk about Splinter really quick?
Yeah.
Splinter. Why does he?
Only if you say it right, Joey.
Splinter.
I can't do it. Why does he look like a cat? Like, I don't feel like this. He doesn't look like a rat anymore in this movie.
Because rats are
like
ugly
a saber-toothed tiger. I don't know.
He lost. He definitely lost the nasty rat veneer.
Yeah.
You know, like he doesn't look like a. And maybe it's the suit, Joe. He's got gigantic shoulder pads. Like, this dude looks like he's ready for war at all times.
Yeah. There was just something about him that I was like, you don't really look like what I thought you were going to look like. But it is nice to see him with more movement.
I do like the red robe.
Like, he just, like, was stationary in the last few movies.
Look at those shoulder pads.
I think it's great. I love him.
You think he found that in the sewers? The robe?
No, I mean, I think he used his hyper rat intelligence to sew it. He downloaded the pattern off the internet, weaved the fabric himself, and sewed it. Because apparently, rats, as we've discovered before, can learn anything just by looking at them. If they're,
I was wondering how long Nick was going to have to, how many words it were going to take for him to get from he's going to sew this thing back to getting to a point of making fun of him learning a form of martial art. And you know what, Nick? You did it in a lot more concise than I expected. So good for you.
Yeah, I practice sometimes. Sometimes I write these things.
I just don't understand your hatred. I mean, I understand it 100%, but it's just it's just so unreasonable how much you despise him.
It's not even that. It's just it stems from the fact that I think it's just a stronger rivalry if both of them were humans before, and like the original rivalry.
It's not. It's not. It's definitely the fact that you think it lessens your karate knowledge.
First off, it does. I mean, we can all agree that it does.
It's kind of Nick. I'm with you. It kind of feels like all right. It's not that easy to learn karate. Everybody, chill out. You know.
That was. That's Hollywood, just Hollywoodizing everything, man. You know what I mean? You see people, you go watch Rocky and they're punching each other in the face for fucking 3 hours straight.
We didn't respect your karate skills beforehand. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna do a kata for you right fucking now.
Nick, I'm gonna do a kata. I need you to stand up, go back near your couch and do a goddamn kata.
I think my big problem with his outfit is it doesn't cover his doodle, you know?
Let's make Nick bigger, please.
He's doing the kata. Look at that. He's doing the kata. He's doing it.
I love this show.
Audio listeners, you're missing out.
Yo, that was impressive.
Audio listeners missing out.
Nick.
Above and beyond, baby. Yeah. You did it. I loved it.
Audio listeners missed out on a show right there.
You're so easily impressed. He didn't even do a single spinning kick.
I can't kick right now. My foot hurts. Do you want to know why my foot hurts? I keep getting foot cramps, Andy, because when I play Modern Warfare, when we play Warzone at night, I curl my feet.
Yeah.
And I notice, I'm like, oh my God, at night they start cramping up on me. So I have to flatten them out on purpose.
How many hours do you put into Warzone a day? Honestly, no exaggeration.
Well, I've been playing Ratchet and Clank lately, so I've transitioned over to that. But maybe a couple hours, unless we're fragging out and we're two or three, like at night. But lately, I've been, because it was double XP weekend last weekend, I was trying to hop on when I could just to get my growl up to speed. Try to get my growl to like level 58.
Get the growl up to speed.
That's a gun. Got
fucking shred. It's a laser, Tim. It's a laser.
Wow.
Anyway,
wait, hold on.
Donnie and Mikey.
Like it just doesn't cover his dick at all. Like they had to make a shadow. It makes no sense
to cover his rat.
To like hide his hoo ha. I'm just saying,
I
don't
think they covered it, or do you think they just didn't give him one?
I hate that Kevin brought this up, and I also hate that it led to Nick saying his rat dick.
Is it that piece to leak? All right, let's get back to the plot. Mikey and Donnie are overjoyed to see their brother Leo, but Raph is a cold, cold fish. Leo wants to end the Night Watch, and Raph, instead of coming clean, tells him that crime doesn't take a break and someone needed to fill the gap left by them. The scene is interrupted by a roar from a nearby construction site. They sneak up to find a bunch of Foot Clan getting their asses handed to them by a giant gorilla monster. Leo wants to figure out a plan, but Raph once again is like, just fucking let's go, and rushes in. And then Leo asks Karai, who? She's working for, but she and the clan just peace out with a pop of smoke. And then the turtles get their asses kicked until the generals show up and handle the monkey. Karai comes back to threaten Winters. He never said anything about monsters. Winters is like, you should be a better negotiator. Like I said, if I say get the terms down. And she's like, well, monsters are not something that I would have thought about. And he says, well, you know, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Okay. You can't just say, I didn't know, officer, what the speed limit was in this area, because you should know. That's on you, right? You're getting that ticket. And then you got to go to comedy driving school for a whole weekend. And it is terrible.
A weekend.
Fucking terrible. It's 2 days straight at the fucking Holiday Inn by the airport.
Nick, it's all digital. You just go online and you have someone else do the test for you.
It's all politics.
No. Can I pay someone to do that? Can I pay your little brother Spencer to do that for me?
Oh, yeah. He'll pass.
Perfect. Get him on the line. Let's see. Winners orders the generals to help Karai and the Foot gather the 12 remaining monsters so they can take over the world. Raph and Leo argue some more until Splinter comes in to watch his stories, which I think is hilarious, but a news report keys him into the truth.
The One Tree Hill.
was it One Tree Hill or Gilmore Girls? I forgot.
Oh, Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls. Yeah.
It got a good chuckle out of me.
Joey, the three girls from One Tree Hill started a podcast. Just
I saw it's called Drama Queens. I'm very excited.
Wait, the three girls from One Tree Hill started a podcast called Drama Queens?
Yeah.
And they couldn't come up with a better name than that. They should have come up with One Tree Podcast.
Three Tree Gals.
He's gone. Tim left. He's gone. He doesn't want to do this anymore.
Shocking that they don't put you two in charge of more branding opportunities.
I know. Kind of really fun.
But with Kevin's winners laughing. Like those, Tiberius, Toberius. You guys are just really knocking it out of the park.
The level of comedy. And it's just, we make fun of them in hopes that they'll better themselves. And they just don't. Because that is
Three
their limitation.
Three Gals is good, man.
Three Tree Gals. Hilarious. Oh man. All right. Let's see. He tells them they can't fight evil if they keep fighting each other. No excuses. Raph once again goes. He's like, screw this, and he goes at it on his own. We got a montage of the generals and the Foot Clan gathering up 8 more monsters and imprisoning them in big tanks. April watches a news report about the generals while Casey heads up to the roof to hang out with Raph. They spot another monster and head after it. And then they see it get darted and captured by the Foot Clan. And then Raph thinks they might be friendly until one of them hits the gargoyle with a dumpster. And then he's like, nope, they're not friendly at all. And then Casey recognizes one of the statues as the statue that they delivered, but accidentally knocks over a rock, alerting the generals to his presence. And then they just dart the shit out of Raph. So he pops smoke and hides with Casey in a storage shed. And I love all of that where he like pops the smoke and like he runs away. Thankfully, of course, before the monsters can burst through the doors, the police show up and scare them off. Raph passes out. So the turtles get a call to head over to April's to tend to him. And they find a stone throwing star embedded in his shell with an engraving from South America. Casey tells them that the statue he collected for Winters were one of the ones that attacked him. And then April reads the instructions on the throwing star about the legend of Yaddle, who up until this point, I'm like, was that the female Yoda? How do you say her name?
Yeah.
Yaddle?
Is that Yaddle?
Y-A-D-D-L-E.
Okay, cool, cool. Not the same spelling. Cool, cool, cool. Raph wants to go after Winters, but Leo tells him that they need Splinter's blessing first. So he's like, you know what? This is it. I quit this team. And then he leaves. And it's like, you always quit, Raph. That's your thing. That's what you do. Donnie,
I do want to point out real quick that I love that Nolan North's voice is still got like, you know, a decent amount of Brooklyn in it, but it's not the team or turtle Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one of like everybody's a teenager and this guy sounds 38 and he just lost his third job, you know. Like I like that he still sounds like a younger kid from Brooklyn, and it's not this. Is the fucking turtles are over here. Like, it's so weird.
Isn't it wild that this movie came out 14 years ago?
It's wild that it's 14 years ago. And if I remember correctly, it was 14 years from the last Turtles movie.
Oh,
when this came out.
I'm not in time.
Splinter!
Yeah, you're like, why is my Uncle Lou out there screaming again? And my grandma's like, just let him do it.
Wait, what was your other uncle? Earlier,
Uncle Paul.
Yeah, okay.
Paul.
I got the cinematic universe.
Uncle Paul. I'm sorry. Do you have an Uncle Lou and your dad is named Lou?
Yeah. Oh my! It was my great Uncle Lou. So it was his. I think it was the guy that my dad was named after. So my grandma, my grandmother's brother was Lou. And
it was just two Lou in the family.
Uncle Lou was the first person to teach me about polyester because he used to wear high-waisted polyester pants from Florida to Southern California. And if you're asking yourself, hey, that looks really uncomfortable in the heat of both Florida and the humidity and also the heat of Southern California,
it was.
He was always sweating. Always. But he was so fucking tan. So tan that it was impressive.
I do have a question though about this. So you phrase this in a way of he's who taught you about polyester. I do want to go around the table and ask Joey, Kevin, Andy, and myself, did anyone ever teach you about polyester?
No. Well, and it also would have been the last thing on my list if you would have asked me what Nick's Uncle Polly taught him about. Wait,
Michael Lou.
Absolutely like, bottom.
Uncle Lou.
What sort of lessons are there?
When we were growing up, like polyester was normal. When Nick was growing up, they had literally just invented it. And I'm not joking. They had like cotton, and then they were like, oh, this magic chemical that won't fuck up the environment.
I'll tell you one thing right now, Kevin's right. I was like, I don't understand what this is. And everyone's like, oh, it's great. It looks like the most uncomfortable fabric that you could ever make anything out of. It's stiff. But my Uncle Lou just used to wear polyester shirts with polyester pants, and they would be like contrasting patterns, and it was hideous. And then he used to wear like white or mint shoes with them.
For the intro to that, I thought I heard, and my Uncle Lou told me about polyester. And I thought, oh, that must be a person in history. I'm sure it's like somebody, maybe Nick has mentioned this person before. And then he said, yeah, and he used to wear polyester all over. And I was like, wait, he's talking about an uncle that taught him about a fabric.
I remember very distinctly being like, mom, why does Uncle Lou wear those really tight, like constricting lacking pants? And she said they're polyester. And I was like, we're on an adventure now.
let me go grab the encyclopedia.
We've just left Tatooine.
Nick, in this story, you do realize your mom taught you about polyester, right?
No, but I mean, like, he was like the guy in front of me, like wearing it.
Impetus
like,
for polyester. The question. Yeah.
Got it.
When I say, you know,
spark the imagination.
My dad taught me about, you know, taxes. That's a literal one to one.
He didn't, though. Like, he still does taxes, your taxes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would get him to do my breaks too if he could, but you know, he's just too far. It doesn't make sense to fly him up here. Anyway, winners. Ralph wants to go at it alone after Winters, but Leo tells him to splinter. Anyway, so he goes out as the Night Watcher, and then Winters gets an update from his general. Two more monsters to go, but they didn't get them all. He's like, but hey, if we get all these monsters, won't we all stop being immortal? Winters is like, yeah, dude, just chill. Winters says, chill. Dottie calculates that when the portal opens, they will lose a bunch of monsters will tear in, and they will lose the world in a matter of weeks. So Splinter tells him once more time to reconcile with Raph, while Winters' generals confide in their brothers that their leader plans to betray them, so they shouldn't find the 13th monster after all. They should just keep running shit. Then we cut over to a diner where a short order cook played by Kevin Smith. Spots a monster.
Not great acting.
You can hear,
you know.
It was improv. They were just like, say some fun stuff, Kevin. He was like, all right, he's back there. And this is a weird scene for me because I'm like, oh, okay, they found the 13th monster. But that isn't the 13th monster. That's just a weird demon thing running around, right?
No, that was the 13th monster. They take Leonardo. I thought the 13th monster
was a giant bronchiosaurus looking thing that was chasing him at the end.
Yeah, I was a little confused about this.
This must be the 12th?
Yeah, I think it must have been prior to the 13th. But like they didn't show him capturing it, so it was kind of weird.
Yeah,
it just escaped.
Just like runs around.
Like this was an editing mistake. This scene should have happened first or something like that. But they kind of wrote themselves in the corner. Anyway, Raph shows up. He calls the cops, and Raph shows up first to get the little devil, but he proves a handful. So Raph feeds him some smoke pellets, and off he runs. And then Kevin Smith thinks he's robbing the store, and Raph's like, "Why can't I just convince everyone that I'm one of the good guys?" And then a dart hits the cash register, and he's like, "What? What's up?"
I was answering his question of why he can't convince people that he's one of the good guys. And I said it was his outfit. Oh, because he's wearing a
really scary outfit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that this is one of those scenes that I feel like Andy was talking about at the beginning where, like, the music in this scene of Black Betty was like, what the fuck are we doing, like, in the kitchen? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Do I appreciate that they bring Black Betty in and because we all need to listen to it every once in a while? Yes, but it did feel very out of place.
I liked it only because I think the way this is shot and then they cut inside of his helmet and he can't really hear that much and the thing's just like on it. I was like, okay, this is a fun scene. This is where we're in fun and games, but I'm not gonna like say you're wrong for your opinion, Joey.
Thank you.
I have a better opinion. Let's see. Raph tries to convince Leo corners him on top of the roof.
Fuck him,
and gives him a little like gives him a little lecture, but Raph's like, is he fucking lecturing me right now? And then he's like, I'm gonna teach this guy a lesson of my own. So they get it on, and then Raph's anger consumes him, and Leo uses it to his advantage, knocking him into next week. But of course, when Raph's helmet comes off, he sees who the Leo sees who the Night Watcher really is, and he's like, what the hell, dude? And they argue, and Leo tells Raph he's impatient and impulsive, and you know what? I'm better than you.
I'm better than you. Fucking straight chills. I love this scene so much. I love when Leo comes up to him and is just talking, and it cuts to Raph, and he's thinking to himself, like, is he monologuing right now? Like, I love that. Like, it's like just the fucking best we've gotten from these guys. And like earlier, Nick, you said, like, oh, it's the same story we keep seeing. Really, like, when we watch this movie, especially after watching the ones we just watched, and knowing your guys' history with the Ninja Turtles, with some of us watching the earlier cartoons, we never got anything this good. We in our minds made Ninja Turtles way doper than it ever fucking was, unless you read certain comic runs. Otherwise, it wasn't that good. Honestly, we just made it cooler because we played with the toys and we added a lot of story to it. This actually delivered that. And I thought it was really, really well done. I saw both perspectives, and I like Leo losing his shit. I like him saying, I'm better than you. It's like, dude, you went too far there.
Yeah.
Like that's not being a leader at all.
Well, not only that, but they fight again because Raph's like, I'm done taking orders from you. And then they fight. And then this time Raph fights a little harder and breaks Leo's swords and then almost delivers a killing blow, proving he's like, hey, you might think you're better than me, but you weren't today. And then both turtles kind of have that realization that they've both gone too far. So Raph runs away in anger, and Leo gets darted by the foot. And they decide to take it back. And then one of the generals is like, hey, this is not the monster. And he's like, yeah, guess what? Yaudo won't know the difference. We'll just pass him off as a 13th monster, and then we'll start wrecking shit.
Smart.
Raph, of course, hears Leo's scream and turns around to find the foot carting him off. So he goes back and confesses to Splinter that he messed up real bad, and he knows why Leo is Splinter's favorite. And Splinter's like, he's not my favorite. I love you all the same. But then he's like, but he is my favorite student. So take that for what it's worth. And I was like, huh, that's
pretty mean thing to say.
Yeah, kind of fucked up. But he's like, you know, I love how passionate you are. I just wish you can channel that passion into the team. He tells Splinter they've taken Leo, and Splinter tells him it's time to come out of the shadows and kick some shell. I wrote that line to him. Casey suits up for battle, and April surprises him with a suit of her own, which includes a little steel hockey mask for him because he keeps breaking his mask. And we've seen April, she was doing like a sword kata, so we were like, okay, she's gonna be a ninja now. And then Karai and the foot set up a defensive perimeter on the tower, but Casey distracts her so the turtles can easily sneak in. You're like, huh, that seemed like a missed beat. And then the stars of Keekin align, so Yaddle can open up the portal, but it doesn't quite work. And then Aguila tells him his time for giving orders is over. And Yaddle tells his generals he's like, listen, you don't understand. I want to undo everything that was done and end everything. And Aguila is like, no, I understand that. Like, in doing that, you will end all of us. And Winters is like, yeah. And Aguila's like, yeah, why would you think we would be cool with that? that's basically ostensibly killing us. And Winters is like, oh, right, I didn't think about that. Maybe I should.
You get outvoted here, Winters.
Yeah, there's four of us here.
Yeah, outside we catch it wasn't up. A democracy. Like, he was the leader, right?
Like that. Apparently it is now, because Aguila's we are more than you.
They're like, also, why do you have a British accent? What the hell?
And he's like,
he lived in Britain. Let it go.
They don't know this, though.
This is like Nick with the car. Remember when he was like, how did 007's car get the rockets? And it was like, just leave it. It's all right. It got rockets.
In the realism of the universe they set up. It's like, why? When would he have time to go over and take all these antiquated gadgets and put them in the car? Why didn't he have cool invisibility?
You know, Nick,
like,
come on your side. Yeah, I'm on your side.
Andy, I'm on your side, too. Give him a fucking Spanish
Andy,
accent.
Andy, just remember Wally got robbed.
Give him a Latin accent.
It did. You're right, Kevin. You're right.
Thank you.
Earlier, I said Dorit was from Cincinnati. She's actually from Connecticut.
Oh, good. Thank
same
you.
Difference.
If I hear one more fact about these
most
women, I swear to God.
Tangents we've ever had in a Turtles movie.
It's important. Probably. It's important to set the record straight, Joey. And you know what? Black Betty, great choice for that scene. outside, we catch up with the Turtles, who are just mid-fight. And it's a really, really weird cut and a huge missed opportunity, because this is the first time they've really engaged with Karai, but whatever. Splinter is there too.
We were seeing Splinter fight. Like, how fucking cool is that? This was the Yoda in Attack of the Clones moment of like, oh my God, he's fucking doing it. And later he has some throwaway line where he's just like, I still got it. Oh, whatever. But it was just presented in such a like weird way where it's like, cut in the middle of the action because it was a cool scene. I liked seeing the fight they're doing, but there was no buildup or context to the set piece. So it was kind of just mid-cut.
Here it is.
Like what we needed a moment where like Casey was trying to run interference and like somebody stepped on a branch or whatever and they let go over and all the turtles are get surrounded finally and they start fighting. You think they're going to win, but then more Foot Clan pour in and who comes in to save them but Splinter. That's a cool beat. And then he helps free them and they all run for the door. And then we get the payoff, of course, of Casey breaking the vase in act one where the doors shut down and they're locked in. But that's not how it happened. They just had them flipping around and beating everyone's ass, and that was kind of cool. They head through the door, yada, yada, yada. Raph finds Leo, and Donnie uses a small explosive device to free him. I like how – oh, by the way, this is something that's really, really cool, and I think it was a smart choice. So in the prior movies, the turtles were fucking huge, and I like that when the turtles stand next to everyone, they're actually smaller than most humans. I think that's a really, really smart choice because I think that puts them sort of immediately at a disadvantage for all of their opponents. And there's a little bit more tension there for it, a little bit more, you know, heightened drama. I just think it's cooler that they're small too. Raph gives him two swords and tells him he's going to need them if he's going to lead us out of here. And Leo looks Raph in the eyes and says, I'm going to need you too, buddy. And then they hug. They kiss each other. They didn't do that.
Why would you go incest?
Why is it incest or bestiality or is it both?
No, because they're both
somewhere.
Weird. Oh, I guess they're both turtles. Yeah.
If one of them,
but they're also both
human,
kind of human.
If one of them had been a human,
done with this conversation,
then it would have been bestiality.
It's one of those. It's a joke that halfway through me making, I was like, back it off, and then the arm went around, and I was like, well, you're here now, you might as well try to sell it, and I did not sell it.
No,
it did not get sold. Anyway, Winters falls to the ground right in front of them, and Mikey has the best line in this whole thing where he's like, Winters looks like falls.
It's a good moment. Yeah, it made me laugh.
Great moment.
And he goes, get it, guys? And then Donnie goes, Rat or Mikey, what do we tell? What do we talk about?
April tells them he needs to send all the monsters home. And Winter's like, hey, listen, you're right. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to set everything right. I'm the good guy here. But Aguila and the other generals want to reopen the portal and use the monsters to destroy and conquer Earth. They tell Karai to swear allegiance to her, but the Foot Clan has honor, she tells them. They work for Winters, which means they're going to help find the last monster and close that porthole forever. Karai, Casey, and April take off in the turtle van to find the last monster, and you're like, oh, this is going to be a cool adventure, and have them trying to work together and figure it out while the turtles fight the generals. Winters wants to help, but Splinter stops him. He says, they are a team. And he's like, yeah, but I'm really big and I'm immortal, so I could probably beat these guys' ass. And he's like, no, they're a team. And he's like, but it's 4-on-4. 5-on-4, it just makes more sense. Yeah. And he's like, they're
it's like we're a bigger team.
A fucking team.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay. And then April drives the Cowabunga Carmobile with the 13th monster chasing them. You're like, oh, that was fast. They found that thing pretty fast. Didn't have to do anything, really. Meanwhile, turtles kick the generals through the portal, but they climb back out. We're immortal and made of stone. Without that final monster, we'll never be stopped. And then a second later, April drives to the doors with the 13th monster in tow, and she pulls a quick right turn, sending the beast skidding into the generals, launching everyone back through the porthole, which sends them skyrocketing into space and time and their other dimension, and they win. Casey has a little moment with Karai, and then was like, oh, this is weird. I hope April doesn't get jealous. So instead of just turning around and not making anything of it, he just kind of punts her out of the way.
Yeah.
And then goes over and kisses April, which is very weird.
Yeah.
And then Karai tells them to, she says, savor this victory because soon Shredder's coming back and they'll be enemies again. And then she pops smoke and they leave. April tells Leo he picked a good time to come home. And Leo thanks her for bringing him back. And then Winters laughs to himself. He's happy because he's mortal again. And he thanks April and the turtles for helping him find his way home. Quote, you've made an old man very, very happy. Then he bursts into golden particles and disappear. And Mikey accidentally inhales him and starts coughing.
I wasn't sure what, but before that, there's a weird moment where they're like, well, what happens next? And he just kind of looks up and he starts dissolving right into spirit form, and then there's this small kind of shot where Raph takes a step forward like as if he's gonna do something about this, and then Splinter holds him back like, no, let him disappear or whatever. But I don't know what Raph was gonna try to do.
Maybe scoop him up, put him in a jar, put him on the mantle.
It's confusing.
Comfort him in his last moments.
Maybe
like, I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark, kind of thing.
Because I saw it as Raph being like, "Oh shit, what's going on? We got to defend ourselves." Like,
yeah,
I was very confused there.
Then they place Yaddle's helmet on the shelf next to the rest of their fallen adversaries, his trinkets, and Raph places the Night Watcher helmet there too, signaling that he's done with it forever. Mikey gets rid of the cowabunga, takes the opportunity to get rid of the cowabunga Carl helmet, and the team all heads to the roof to do some cool parkour.
I love that scene. Sky. I love the reference to the old movies, like putting the stuff, and I love the stinger joke of Michelangelo bringing the thing. I think the pacing of it wasn't the best necessarily, but I think that it was a funny scene.
I loved it.
Leading it into the final rooftops shit, which was the original teaser trailer for this movie. Oh, man. I fucking love it. There's nothing more quintessentially Ninja Turtles Tumnut than this scene of them jumping parkour all on the fucking thing together, all uniquely moving in the way they should, and it ending with them saying, "We'll always be brothers." Come on, man. And then Gym Class Heroes, baby. Let's go.
There it is.
What happened to Travis McCoy? Let's bring him back.
What happened? Oh, that is a very good question, Joey. He was on the top of the world. He wanted to be a billionaire so fucking bad.
So bad.
God. You know, he got famous because he was dating Katy Perry. It's crazy.
She's in the video with them. Like that, she's in that first music video in Cupid's Chokehold or whatever.
Yeah. Da 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 da. Andy, hit me.
Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Andrew Feisner did. A missing leader, lost brothers with no purpose. Wait, no Shredder? Spoopy Witches says, banger ass soundtrack, all emo, all pop punk, all day. Oh, movie's pretty good. We got, let's see. Joe Merton saying, Splinter gets his due. Always tear up with that voice. Mako is the GOAT. And Zade Wilson says, if this doesn't take the top spot, I won't be mad. Just disappointed. And then Miscellaneous, making the return after a couple weeks of taking a little bit of a break here. Of course, we got the plot in haiku. Glad I missed the last, but even with a great cast, this movie is ass. Leo and Raph mad. Dumbass argument they had. Vigilante's bad? Low effort haikus for this movie. I refuse. Good shit won't be used.
Damn, he didn't like it. I think Andy.
That's harsh.
Wow.
I don't understand poetry, but I think that was a negative.
Wow.
Yeah, it's definitely
wow. Wow. Do you have the soundboard, Andy?
I actually do. One second.
Wow. Thank you. Wow.
I love you got multiple ones. Fuck God, I love us. Wow. All right, give me with some ragu bagu, please.
Wow. What's up, everyone? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here for Tumnut in review. The list is, hold on, let me see if I can pull it up. There we go, right there. Number one, Shredder and the Foot Clan and those amazing shoulder pads from TMNT. One, Trooper Shredder and the Wolf and Snapping Turtle from two. And then rounding out the list is Lord Nurnaga and Walker. And most notably, the screenwriters from the film Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. Where do we want to put Winters, General Aguila and the Generals, and Karai?
I vote we put it above, in the third spot, in the third spot.
I go number one Shredder easily because there's at least a plot, and there is a twist of the bad guy's not actually a bad guy. And there was some cool action scenes because of the bad guys. Even though the whole exposition sucked and all that, it's still a decided
Shredder
step above the others. Yeah, because like
think
really,
it's as good as Shredder.
Yeah,
I think that when you boil down Shredder in the first movie and what he did, it wasn't much except die and wear a blouse.
He also built a gang of teenagers that systematically took down the city's goods. Stole it all.
Do you know how hard it is to get teenagers to do good work?
Mm-hmm. He also got flipped over by a fucking rat.
Hold on. A rat that's a expert nasty in rat. Karate. All right.
A highly intelligent rat. As
a highly intelligent
like a super rat.
Rat that is just expert in karate. It is very simple to learn karate. And we all know that now.
Well, we also got to give him some credit for coming back from the dead in the next movie. Like that's
thank you.
This man got crushed.
Raise your hands
a giant
if you
zombie
think
mutant.
Raise your hands if you think Super Shredder and the Wolf, or excuse me, Winters, the Generals, and Karai are better than Super Shredder and the Wolf and the Snapping Turtles.
And Karai and the Foot are dope.
Wait.
Everyone
except I'm sorry. Yeah, I'll put them. I misunderstood. This is, so you're saying better than?
Yes. The two? Higher up on the list than those.
Oh, I put my hand down.
Okay. Keep your hand up if you think Shredder and the Foot, excuse me, Winters, the General, and Karai are better than Shredder and the Foot Clan and those amazing shoulder plaids from the first one. Just me and Tim. And
Andy.
Andy with the last minute.
So it is official. They are number one now. Winters, the Generals, and Karai are number one on the list for Rad Guys, Talk Bad Guys, for Tumnut in Review.
I have one more question before we finish this out. Are you guys telling me that I've watched 4 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies and I haven't seen Bebop and Rocksteady once?
Correct.
Yeah.
But okay. Just making sure.
Actually, but no future spoilers.
No future
spoilers. Megan Fox is in the next one.
Is she Bebop or Rocksteady?
She might be.
She's both.
She might be both. Her name, her character's name is Bebop Rocksteady Fox. It's weird.
It was keep her last name? Is it because
it's a bold choice? They could have cast her as April O'Neil, but yeah. Bebop and Rocksteady, Lohan twin situation from The Parent Trap. I like it.
Exactly, Joey.
It's time to rank the Tumnut universe. Currently, number one, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. Number two, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1990. And number six, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time. Where do we want to rank TMNT?
I think this is
it's number one, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the most cohesive movie. I think the jokes work. I think the choreography is great. And I think it could have, it's not the best movie, but I think it's far and away more of a cohesive film than the first three.
Yeah.
Andy, I want to hear you say it.
It's like, damn. I'm in that sort of Nick Scarpino thinks Fast and Furious 1 is better than the later ones, and Iron Man 1 is better than the later ones. Like, I think I'm much more fascinated by the nostalgia that the first one gives me, even though the first one's second right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, I'm in that situation too. Like, if number one, if TMNT one were rank one, then I'd be like, I'd put Tumnut at number two. But since it's not, I'm in that weird sort of positioning. I'd say this movie is number one, an overall better movie. But I personally enjoyed watching Turtles fucking shit, Tumnut one more than Tumnut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go. Number one, Tumnut. Number two, Secret of the Ooze. Number three, Turtles 1990. And number six, Ninja Turtles 3, debatably Turtles in Time. Next week, we are returning with another movie called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Fuck.
Can't wait.
Tumnut 2014, okay? Michael Bay, it's happening. We are also this week reacting to Luca, the new Pixar movie coming out for free on Disney Plus. Go check that out this Friday. Mm-hmm. It's happening. Fun stuff. But until then,
I love being eternal.
Tumnut.
Jesus.